This podcast is a Majestic Giraffe production. For more information and more content, visit majesticgiraffe.com.
But I was going into Toshi Station to pick up some power converters.
Droids are clean, the vaporizers are patched, and the speeders fuel. It's time to pick up some blue milk and power converters. You're listening to Toshi Station Radio, brought to you by the Majestic Giraffe Network. Now here are your hosts for the Snarkiest Podcast in Star Wars and Geek Culture, Brian and Nancy.
From the outskirts of Anchorhead and on the shores of the Great Chott Flats, you're listening to Toshi Station Radio, the bright center in the universe for all things Star Wars and geek culture. I'm your host, Brian, and with me, as always, is my co-host and fiancé, Nancy.
Hello.
On today's episode, we're chatting with author, marine, and all-around awesome human being, Janine Spendlove. We're about to get started, so sit back, grab some power converters, and enjoy the show. And before we get too much further, a note from our sponsors. Toshi Station Radio is brought to you in part by Audible.com. Listeners to this podcast can get a free audiobook by signing up for a free trial. Click the link on Toshi-Station.net for more details.
And we're also brought to you in part by Her Universe. Flaunt your world with Star Wars, Star Trek, Battlestar Galactica, Doctor Who, and other fandom-inspired wardrobe and jewelry. Click the link on our blog to purchase awesome geek gear and keep the lights running on the podcast.
And before we dive into what we've been up to, it's time to highlight what's new on the blog. What do we got, Nancy?
Well, we have a review of the making of Return of the Jedi, which came out on Tuesday. It's the third book by J.W. Rinsler about the making of the original trilogy. And it's a really awesome book. We couldn't even crack the surface of it before writing the review, but it's definitely got a ton of information. Great pictures.
It's worth it for the pictures alone.
If you never read a word of text, it's worth the price just for the pictures.
But the text, holy cow, the text in this book.
Yeah.
There are all sorts of great notes, transcripts of conferences between George Lucas, Lawrence Kasdan, and other critical members of the production crew for Return of the Jedi. There's all sorts of interesting notes from actors, from the special effects personnel, and really cool summaries of early drafts of the film.
Yeah, if you've read the previous two, or you definitely need to get a hold of this one, round out the collection. It's definitely a great source for Star Wars fans, filmmaking fans, pretty much just anyone interested in film or Star Wars in general. I also did a spoiler-free go-no-go review of The Darwin Elevator by Jason Huff. Basically, I suggest going to read it. I think it's pretty good sci-fi, and I'll be going to check out the second and third books in the trilogy. And Bria reviewed the Star Wars number 2, which came out today.
And you know that the Star Wars comic, I think this is one I'm definitely going to want to pick up and trade. It really sounds interesting.
Yeah, I'll probably skim through and trade. It seems like something that would at least be interesting to read through.
And with that, we move on to Fixer's Flash, the geeky things we've been up to, and Nancy, as is customary, we start with you.
Well, like I said, I finally finished The Darwin Elevator. The time it took for me to read it does not reflect the quality of the book, but me being distracted and then frazzled and not really doing anything creative or consumptive lately. But I finished the book, so that is done. I'm going to read the next two, try to start writing again. I have an idea for a short story I want to write this week or next. But Darwin Elevator, I liked it. It's been described as popcorn sci-fi, but I think it's more than that too. It's a pretty interesting story. I think the intrigue is only going to get better in the second and third books. There was one thing I brought up in the go-no-go that kind of bothered me, and it was the rampant objectification of women. And I realize it's a storytelling device to show how awful things are in Darwin, how, you know, horrible the human population has gotten because of the situation they're in, and also to show that the main villain is a real asshole. But
there's got to be ways to make that point without resorting to that.
Yeah, I mean, I could, you know, there are some parts that, I mean, it's definitely effective because I wanted to punch the guy every time he was on the page. But after a while, there were parts that seemed very cliche. Like, oh yeah, of course you're going to make this guy a misogynistic asshole to make him be the villain, because that's an easy way to do it. And then I was kind of like, okay, I really don't need to hear this guy's thoughts again about how much he wants to have sex with this girl. But it wasn't something that put me off of it completely. It was just, you know, it was something that made me a little uncomfortable, but then again, you're kind of supposed to be uncomfortable. So, it's kind of one of those hard things where it's not done to glorify, it's done to, you know, show bad things happening. And it's not so blatant that they depict, you know, violence against women or rape or anything like that. It's just the guy's thoughts. So, but overall, that all said, I did enjoy it, and I will be finishing up the trilogy. Definitely reading book two.
So what's next on your reading list?
Razor's Edge. And we should be able to talk about it next week.
I'm hoping so,
well,
yes.
Well, it's only 250 pages, so I should be able to finish it pretty quickly. The other problem with Darwin Elevator is it's a lot longer than most books that I usually read. It's 472 pages, so...
That's a lot for popcorn sci-fi.
It is. It's really long. And, I mean, it's not long as in awe it dragged, but I'm like, man...
There's a lot in this book.
Yeah, so... But yeah, I'll be reading Razor's Edge next, and then reading the rest of the trilogy. We also caught up with Once Upon a Time, finally.
Yeah.
We decided, since it was premiering, we finally watched the season finale from last season and the season premiere. And kind of going to give it another shot. I like that they're in Neverland. I think that could be interesting. But, man, I hope they get rid of some subplots.
I mean, they only did just barely enough.
I was really glad
watching.
That I really hope certain people are off the show. Well, one character definitely is because she's dead. And then the other guy, I don't remember what happened to him, but I think he's gone too, which thank God, because they were boring.
Now if they just kill Belle off.
Yeah, just not have her on the show anymore because she's not in Neverland.
Put her on a bus. Get her off the show.
Yeah. And we watched The Last Starfighter this weekend.
That's such a great...
It really is.
...piece of science fiction cinema.
And now I want a story like that with a girl as a lead.
Come on, Hollywood, you're rebooting everything else.
Or I should just write that, maybe.
Yeah. Well, in addition, we watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the second episode yesterday, which I thought worked better than the first.
Yeah, I liked it a little bit more. It's so... Yeah, there's still some aspects of it that bother me, but...
There are aspects, though, that I think will get worked out as the show goes on. I mean, for no other reason than the people who are running the show, if there's one thing I trust them with, it's characters.
I'll definitely give it the season to...
You know. I mean, we've watched enough Whedon shows to know that you don't ever write a Whedon show off before the first season's done.
He does long form, like Ali said last week, he does long form storytelling the best, so.
Yeah. And thankfully he's on a network now that I think is actually going to give him the chance to make that happen.
Oh, and what about that cameo at the end?
Oh, that was the most delightful 2 minutes of television all year.
Yes.
That was great. If you don't know what we're talking about, go catch up on S.H.I.E.L.D. There's only 2 episodes right now, and you'll see why we're so amused by the last 2 minutes yesterday.
Exactly.
So that's pretty much it for us. We've got upcoming kind of geeky plans, but not much we've done lately.
Yep.
We'll talk about those next week.
Yes.
With that, it's into Deke's Dirt News and Rumors from Around Fandom, and we start with a rather enlightening expose Kotaku did. Kotaku, the gaming blog over on the Gawker Network, that profiled LucasArts collapse, and it's not pretty. The company was in a lot of trouble long before Disney got into the picture.
I'll let you describe it because you know me and video games.
Well, essentially, there was a carousel of executive management, each coming in with their own sweeping visions and changes to the company, and what their goals were, and LucasArts never had time to really establish anything before another manager would come in and completely change everything they were up to. So you had that, and then you also had the high-up execs at Lucasfilm coming in and working on their marquee titles and changing things at the last minute, causing the developers to have to go back to the drawing board for a lot of elements. So it was a studio in a lot of trouble, and really by the time Disney came into the picture, the studio was just too dysfunctional to keep going. So the studio got dismantled, and the IP was handed off to third-party publishers who could perhaps better make use of the Star Wars brand. So it was sad to see that happen to one of the most venerable game publishers in the whole video game industry, but you read that expose and you think to yourself, well, that was kind of the inevitable conclusion.
Yeah, sadly.
J.J. Abrams, moving on, had an appearance on a PBS talk show to talk Star Trek and Star Wars, and he reassured fans Star Wars is not going to be Disney-fied.
Okay.
Because have any people who have made that claim or is worried about it seen Marvel?
Right.
Because wasn't it terrible when the Avengers ended with Thor grabbing Loki by the shoulder, smiling at him, and saying, Loki, Ohana means family.
You love making that joke, don't you?
I do love making that joke. People realize that Disney is not going to destroy Star Wars with whimsy, I'm going to keep making it.
Well, I think they forget that Disney owns a ton of production companies that make R-rated movies and adult entertainment and all this stuff. So, yeah.
I mean, it's not 1985 anymore. Disney owns a lot of things that don't traditionally fall into cartoon whimsy. Why are we suddenly terrified that Disney's going to do it to Star Wars?
Yeah.
Because we're a fandom that needs something to worry about at all times. What?
Yes, we are.
And Dark Horse entered into a distribution partnership with Random House, which means we should have an easier time getting trades off the backlog into readers' hands. It's a good thing all around. Random House has the Star Wars intellectual property for prose fiction. Dark Horse has the property for visual fiction and comics, so yeah, it's a good fit, I think. No telling what this means quite yet, but synergy and whatnot seems to say it's good for everyone.
So, I don't know, how are they distributed right now?
I'm not too clear on the specifics, but Dark House is pretty much responsible for the bulk of the work getting things distributed, especially trades and such like that. Random House should be able to help them in that regard, just getting things out in larger quantities and in more form factors to people.
Cool.
And it's that time again.
It's that time?
Yes. The episode 7, The Rebels, and the live-action TV rumor roundup.
Woo!
Woo! And someday I'm going to cut up that sound from Spaceballs.
We ain't found shit.
And it's true. We ain't found shit. The timeline of Rebels. Rumor has it, it's going to be set 8 years after Revenge of the Sith.
I don't know how I feel about this.
I think I'd prefer it to be closer to A New Hope.
Me too. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I think a lot of it is because it's called Rebels. So I'm immediately thinking Rebel Alliance, and in the expanded universe, the official Rebel Alliance was not formed until right before A New Hope. And that's a logical thing. You know, that is something from the EU that I think should be kept because...
That makes sense, because a rebellion 8 years after Revenge of the Sith probably wouldn't gotten quashed.
Well, hello. You know, the opening crawl of Star Wars is the rebellion has won their first victory against the Galactic Empire. So, to me, that always made me think that the rebellion was very new. And
can you imagine the rebellion having 12 years of...
I really love the backstory of that. There was rebellions on planets. There was a lot of different uprisings. And then it was only, like, closer to A New Hope as more time has passed that they had gotten organized. And they became one group. It's rooted in history. It makes sense. It's logical. And it would really bother me if, oh, that's just thrown away. But then again, they say the rumors are that this is going to focus on this one ship and the crew of the ship. So if these are all new characters that we've never met before, and it's just their story, then I think that could be interesting.
You know, I could see that. A nice, tight, focused narrative on a core group.
Kind of like Firefly, almost.
Okay, now I really like this concept.
But I was really hoping we'd get to see people we already knew. I was really hoping it would be like, you know, pre-A New Hope Rebels with, like, Garmbel Iblis and Mon Mothma and...
I just have a hard time seeing them doing this show and not tying it into some major characters or storylines from the film franchise.
Yeah.
It was a model that worked so well for the Clone Wars. Why would they suddenly go away from it now?
Well, that of course begs the question, are they going to tie it into the sequel trilogy, which really...
You know, I've heard that rumor. I just don't know how much I buy it. How many years would pass?
Wow. We'll see.
How old would those characters be if they survived the television show?
Well, apparently there might be some information at New York Comic Con, so...
And the biggest thing, how much of that information is currently written?
Yeah.
But yes, New York Comic Con, Pablo Hidalgo is going to be there doing a Rebels panel, so please don't ask him when Karen Travis is coming back, because that's an entirely unrelated question. But Pablo's going to be there, there's going to be a Rebels panel, and he hinted that there may be some new information for fans.
Crossing our fingers.
Because getting any kind of confirmed information at this point would be a godsend.
Yeah. More rumors they're talking about, with the success of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., is Disney going to rethink having the live action show and try to revive that? It definitely makes sense.
Absolutely.
This would be one that would make sense. It would just kind of depend on, you know, with the whole story group and trying to make everything all synergistic. Does it fit in with what they're wanting to do? I can see them delaying it until episode 7 comes out because they want to focus on episode 7, and they do have Rebels coming out. But I could also see them pushing it forward and saying, we want to build up, you know, not that they have to build up an audience. I mean, that's silly, but...
You put Star Wars in the title and it's a license to print money.
Yeah. And in more rumors, but there's casting... Rumors.
So apply your truckloads of salt now.
The Saoirse Ronan said confirmed that she auditioned, which means nothing except that she auditioned.
And probably every actor and actress in Hollywood right now has read for a part or is vying to read for a part.
Why would you not?
Exactly.
It just means that she's smart and is not dumb.
And depending on who you want to believe, Ben Kingsley may or may not have read for a part.
And Sullivan Stapleton, who I've never heard of before, but who's apparently in the new 300 movie. So, more rumors. Again, let's talk about how we want some news.
So when does principal photography start?
I think January or February.
Shouldn't we be hearing something soon on casting?
Probably within the next month or two. Okay. I know. I remember them revealing the cast for Phantom Menace in June of 97. And I believe they started filming a little bit after that.
Okay. I mean, it feels like we're within a month or two
yeah.
of hearing something, just because with principal yeah. photography just around the corner.
Yeah. And I can't remember when... I wish I could remember when they announced Hayden Christensen as Anakin, because that was the big one for the prequels, is who's going to play Anakin in episode 2 and 3. And there were so many rumors about that. So many rumors. And it ended up being someone completely different than the rumors. So
yeah. So we'll see. Hopefully we'll be hearing something soon on the Rebels and the yeah. episode 7 front, so we don't have to keep doing this stupid rumors yeah. segment.
And the frustrating thing is that, like, at least in episode, like, for the prequels, we could say, okay, well, so-and-so is rumored to play Ben Kenobi. So-and-so is rumored to play Anakin Skywalker. And we knew who these people were. And here we don't even know who the people are going to be.
Yeah, so now it's so-and-so is rumored to play someone.
Yeah.
I'm making angry gesticulations right now.
Yeah, so, like, the only people we're kind of thinking are going to be in the movie are already cast, because those are Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher,
now,
and Harrison Ford.
Fans, before you start freaking out, you are going to hear casting before too long, because even though J.J. Abrams likes his secrets, that's beyond him to keep secret. You can't keep that from IMDb forever.
And we're going to... It's 2013. We get set photos now, so...
Yeah. And come on, this is the highest profile film of the last, well,
ever.
Since.
Well, yeah. No. Since the prequels.
Yeah, since Phantom Menace, so.
Yep.
We're going to know things. We're probably going to know them soon, because that's just when it makes sense to happen.
Hopefully.
And that's Deke's Dirt. With that, we go into Cammy's Concerns, and we're going to cut away to an interview we just recorded about an hour ago with author Janine Spendlove, who wrote the War of the Seasons books, which are fantastic, and you should get them, as well as several short stories. Janine is a big Star Wars fan, convention attendee, and a fantastic author. So we hope you enjoy this interview, and we will catch you on the other side.
We're here with a friend of the show and friend of ours, Janine Spendlove. Hi, Janine. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Howdy. I think this is the first live one I've ever done.
Ooh. Yay. Yeah.
That's okay. We don't actually have any listeners, so it's just like any other podcast you've ever done.
Why am I doing this?
We have listeners. Don't listen to him.
Well, I listen.
Yeah, see?
Mention me.
See, Brian?
Okay,
you just need to mention me more.
Yes.
We have a listener. We need to plug Janine's work more, and then we'll get all the listeners.
Okay, so we always start the interview with the same question, because we're a Star Wars-based podcast. So we want to know, how and when did you become a Star Wars fan?
I can't pinpoint a time where I haven't been a Star Wars fan, to Ooh, be honest.
That's so, a good answer.
I literally have no memory of not knowing what Star Wars was and loving it, so... I guess. Cool. There you go.
Well, when did you get more involved in, like, fandom sort of thing, I guess you could call it?
Okay. Well, I didn't know there was... I didn't really know that there was anything like fandom. I think my first experience and understanding was what fandom was probably, you know, Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter. Before that, Star Wars was just, you know, a part of my life.
Yeah.
And had other friends who were the same way, and, you know, we just kind of, you know, realized that we all loved this thing. And, you know, I remember going to Sadie Hawkins when I was in high school and wearing my hair up in Princess Leia buns and my date for Darth Vader t-shirts. And I remember becoming obsessed with the books when I was 15. That's when I discovered them. The first one was, we were on a family vacation and we were visiting my Aunt Bee and Uncle Leo. Yes, I have an Aunt Bee. We were in the state of Washington, and I was bored and looking at their bookshelf, and I saw that they had a Star Wars book, and I was like, wait, there are books? And I picked it up, and it was The Truce at Bakura, which I believe was written by Kathy Tyers.
Yep.
And I asked them if I could read it, and they were like, of course, read it. And so instead of actually hanging out with my family or doing anything, I sat in a corner and I read, and I knew we were leaving the next day. And I was completely engrossed in this book because suddenly it was more Star Wars, and I hadn't had anything more other than, like, the Battle for Endor, you know? And all I can say is that was, if you could call something a gateway drug, that was it. And just been released, and I think up until that point the only other Star Wars books really out were the Zahn trilogy, of course, the Jedi Academy trilogy
and then
you
Jedi-
say that so enthusiastically.
the new Empire like the comic with the Empire coming back alive, I remember reading that. I don't remember what it was called. Dark Empire. And then there were, like, a bunch of, like, kids' books.
The Jedi Prince books, which I read for the blog, and they're terrible.
And then there was, like, some, I think they were written by Brian Daley, some old Han Solo books, and some old Lando Calrissian books, and then a book called Splinter of the Mind's Eye, and that was, like, it, you know? And I remember reading all those just voraciously, like I couldn't get enough. And I think I read the Zahn trilogy like 3 times or something. It was so good. I just could not, I kept rereading it. And so pretty much anything that came out after that that had Star Wars on it, I bought it. You know, I got a job, and that is, you know, you're a teenager, a 15-year-old girl working for minimum wage at a bakery, and you know, what are you going to do with your money? You have a free place to live and food taken care of, you know. You're not going to buy makeup and crazy stuff like that. No, you're going to buy Star Wars books and hang out with all your Star Wars friends and go camp out for the re-release of the Star Wars trilogy in the theater with your friends.
That sounds a lot like my teenage years, Janine.
And that's actually how I met Brian Young, was at college at BYU, when episode 1 was coming out, you know. He was camping out for episode 1 and had for like a month. I remember coming out. He started camping out a month before the movie came out. And I remember coming out of the theater going, who is this Joker already camping out? Oh, crap. I better start camping out soon, too. So like 2 weeks before the movie came out, there are already like 10 groups in line ahead of me. And so I organized people in my apartment complex who were interested in camping out. And I organized like a sleep cycle for us, and we were like 10th back in line or something. And then Brian was kind of like the governor of the line.
Oh, God.
Kept order, you know, and because the police wanted to throw him out. And he was like, you know, I've got this agreement with the movie theater. As long as we're orderly and good, like we can stay camping here. And, you know, we're all predominantly, most of the people in line were, you know, Mormon kids going to BYU. And so, you know, we weren't really up to much craziness. So I think it was thankfully pretty easy for Brian to keep order in the line. Anyway, he came back and he introduced himself, and I'm somewhat competitive. And so I challenged him to a game of Star Wars Trivial Pursuit and promptly beat him. But only because I went first, you know how the Star Wars Trivial Pursuit game went, you know, whoever goes first wins, right? Yeah,
pretty much.
So I whipped up on him, and apparently, not by whipping up on him, that means, you know, I went first and didn't miss any questions. So I think that, you know, raised his respect for me, and then he started inviting me to hang out with him and the other guys at the front of the line, Jesse being one of our good friend Jesse being one of them. And then inevitably, they were kind enough to move me up there to the front of the line with them. And so I ended up being like the third person to buy a ticket, and it was cool.
That's a pretty awesome story.
Yeah. That's how Brian and I met, and we've been friends ever since.
That's very cool, because I was going to ask that question, so now I don't have to.
But yeah, I don't really think of Star Wars as a fandom for me. It's just kind of a part of my life.
Yeah.
Sounds.
I think that's how most of us feel, because it's kind of hard to imagine not doing Star Wars things on a daily basis.
So, like, I very frequently, particularly in the last couple years, have been, you know, pinching myself going, if only I could go back and tell 15-year-old me, you know that Zahn guy whose books you kept reading, that Stackpole guy, that Alston guy, you know, those guys whose books you kept reading and thought were so awesome. You're friends with them now. Guys write together. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I have to say that I'm pretty jealous about that.
Like, it makes my head kind of want to explode if I think about it for too much, so I don't. Like, I just remember sitting on a panel with Tim, very recently, a military, how to write military sci-fi panel. I'm sitting next to Tim Zahn, and there are several other very well-known authors, like Aaron Rosenberg and a couple other guys who, you know, write for very well-known series, and I'm just the one girl on the panel, and I'm just sitting there kind of like, hi. And it was at Con Carolinas, and everybody's saying, you know, what their qualifications are for being on this panel, this packed room. And I was just like, well, I'm, you know, I wrote this book called War of the Seasons, but it's fantasy and not science fiction. And I don't write military. I have two military sci-fi short stories coming out soon, but they're not out right now. And I really don't know why I'm on this panel. Oh, except for I'm a United States Marine. And then, like, I'm so embarrassed because for the rest of the panel, everyone in the audience was asking me questions directly. And then the panelists themselves were asking me questions directly. And I felt like it was very, very, very surreal. And of course, Tim got up and gave me one of his trademark back rubs, like, in the middle of the panel. And people are tweeting pictures of it, and I just went, oh, gosh. 15 girls are so hard right now.
I saw a picture of that. That was pretty awesome.
And I'm going to talk your guys' ears off, so I'll stop now.
That's
fine. Oh, no, that's okay. That means we have to record less later.
Okay, right. So you kind of already answered this question when you talked about reading the books, but, like, what other sorts of... Because there's so many aspects of Star Wars. So, like, have you played any of the video games? Or, you know, what sorts of... How do you basically get your Star Wars now?
I'm actually not a gamer.
Yay, me neither.
And this is probably going to sound like blasphemy to most Star Wars fans. Really not that big into the visual media either. For that matter. I mean, I really like the original trilogy because, I mean, it was just something I loved as a kid. But the movies, the TV show, the cartoon, all that stuff, I mean, it really doesn't do much for me. My love for Star Wars truly exploded with the books. I love the expanded universe. I love it.
You are on the right podcast.
I'm very excited about the new trilogy coming out, the sequels. I think they're going to be great. I know that a lot of people are very, very concerned about what this means for the EU, and I'm absolutely not concerned because no matter what happens with the new movies, they could completely invalidate the EU, just like the prequels invalidated a lot of stuff in the EU. I don't care. Because my Star Wars love is my Star Wars love. The things I think happened are the things that I think happened. So you can tell me that Boba Fett died in Return of the Jedi. That's fine. To me, he will always be someone who crawled out of that Sarlacc pit alive. That's just the way it is. You can, in the new movies, say that Luke marries someone else. And maybe it's a really awesome person that he marries. And I can accept that. I can also cling to the fact that he married Mara Jade and had an awesome son named Ben. I guess maybe going through the Star Trek reboot has really helped me be okay with that. Because I look at the Star Trek reboot and I don't think it says everything that happened in the previous shows never happened now. I think what it says is, all right, this is an alternate universe. And guess what? You have so much Star Trek now to love, and I'm kind of looking at the new Star Wars movies as that. You know what? It's just all going to be alternate universe. You can decide which one's your primary and which one's the alternate to you. It can all be canon as far as I'm concerned, and there's just so much to love. So
that sort of leads us into the next standard question we ask a lot on this show. What are you hoping for as far as the sequel trilogy goes?
Honestly, I don't really have any hopes. I don't care. I'm very, very happy with what the expanded universe has given me. So I really do look at the new movies as expanded universe. So as long as I see some lightsabers, some Jedi, some space pirates, some good dialogue, some good acting, some tight scripts, and spaceship battles, I'm going to be happy.
I can certainly get behind that.
Yeah, me too. So your story before about meeting Brian Young begs a question. Are you going to camp out for episode 7?
You know, as much as there is a part of me that really, really, really wants to, I'm not a high school kid with no responsibilities. I'm not a college kid with no responsibilities now. You know, I'm a United States Marine. I'm a mom. I can't. If I can get out to Utah to see the premiere with Brian for old time's sake, that would be really awesome. You know, and with the way you can buy tickets now online and ahead of time, there's really no need to camp out.
Yeah.
So maybe for old time's sake, if I can take a day of leave, you know, I can head out there and Brian and I can sit out in front of the movie theater for a day, you know, just BSing for old time's sake. And I don't know, maybe he plans on camping for a month. good for him if he does. I can't.
Yeah, that's being an adult and having an adult responsibilities sometimes is silly, but
Brian has all those and more. He's busier than me, I think. He's how he does it all.
I know, I don't either.
Anybody could find a way to camp out for Star Wars for a month and still manage his adult responsibilities, he would.
Yeah.
So you go to a lot of conventions and you often cosplay, and because one of the things we do on the blog is we talk about cosplay, we're curious, what's your favorite costume you've done at a con?
Oh, you know what? It really changes with time, and a lot of it is reaction. I have so many ones that I love and that are just fun and that are favorites. I mean, this year at Dragon Con, I did the parade dressed in my classic A New Hope Leia, but I wore Disney ears that had Leia's name embroidered on the back of it on top of everything. And, you know, that one just made people laugh and smile. That was a lot of fun. It also really horrified a certain Rebel Legion person who told me that I couldn't march with her.
Oh, my God.
I was like, wow, okay, I'll go march at the back. 501st peeps, what? No, I'm sure that I have a lot of really, really wonderful Rebel Legion friends, and I probably just very badly characterized the Rebel Legion, and I apologize. I should not. That was just one person who was a little bit snotty to me, and maybe she was completely in the right, and I need to just be quiet. So other fun costumes. I had a really good time this year at Dragon Con being Thor. I've got a gender-swapped Thor that I love to do. We did it as a family last year at Geek Media Expo. My daughter went as Nikki Fury. Our other daughter went as Captain America. And then my husband went as Tony Stark, and I was Thor. And
the Nikki Fury costume was adorable.
Yeah, we have good times. What can I, you know? And then there was the year my husband, you know, that the fourth Harry Potter movie came out, and my husband was a dead ringer for Victor Krum, and I made all these Victor Krum Hermione costumes. It's just really, honestly, for me, I have a lot of fun dressing up with my husband, dressing up with my family, and dressing up with my friends. I know for a lot of people, cosplay and costuming is about getting pictures taken of them and people loving what they do. And it used to be that for me, because I liked having people tell me that I did good work. I kind of needed that at the time. I'm not really in that place right now. Now I just do what I want because it's fun. But the people who are that way, like, they view it as their profession, and you know what? Fantastic. That's the way that they choose to express themselves. And I say more power to them, because I don't know. They're also the ones who are very, very very precise and everything has to be absolute. Oftentimes they're the ones where everything has to be perfect. I'm not one of those people. I've often been the self-proclaimed queen of ghetto fabulous costuming. I'm like, it's from about 10, 20 feet away, it's good enough. Don't come any closer.
That was our, motto in drama in high school was it's good enough. Looks good from the stage.
I have some friends who I look at their costumes and, you know, their embroidery or their attention to detail is so absolutely perfect and my jaw just drops and I love to just go and look and I'll see costumes like that at Dragon Con and I used to be super envious and, oh, I wish I could be that good. And now I just go, you know what? That's like me being envious of somebody who can run, you know, way faster than me in a race. It's silly and it's foolish. I should be happy with the things I can do. And I should be just really appreciative of the beautiful things you can do. And so I look at these crazy, amazing, wonderful costumers and just love on their costumes and give them a high five because they're great.
Yeah.
So I'm also wondering, when did you start attending conventions? We're big on the convention circuit here. So, just wondering when you started, if you've got any fun convention stories you can share.
Well, my first convention ever was actually, it was called IQM2, and it was a toy show. My Star Wars Fan Force group invited me to come up, and I was like, I'm going to make a Jedi costume for this. And I'd had the beginnings of one from when I went to see episode 2 with Brian, and so I helped my friends put together some costumes, and I took Will, my foster son at the time. My husband was stationed in Florida, so he couldn't go. And we went, and that is where I actually first met the 501st, a lot of my wonderful friends there, like Sherilyn Lambeth. And this was back in 2003. And then that's where I met Richard LeParmentier, rest in peace, my friend, who, as hopefully most listeners know, played Admiral Mahdi. And just very recently passed away. Brian and I did a bit of a eulogy for him on Full of Sith right after it happened with Kinsetta Parker. And that's where I met him, and that's where he and I kind of started our friendship. And it was just, I didn't realize what a turning point that little toy show was for me, because, like I said, it's where I met the 501st and where I've made some of the most amazing friends I've ever had, like Al and Kathy, and through the 501st, I obviously met, you know, Katie Johnson, and she played such an important part in our life as well. And it's where I looked at all these amazing costumes. I look at these stormtroopers and I got to really up my A game. And from there, just started attending Dragon Con, you know, all the local, North Carolina conventions I could find. And now as a writer, I go to a lot more conventions because I go to them now as guests and their work, but their fun work.
Cool. So that's a good transition because you've written two books now in the War of the Seasons series, and you've written several other short stories. So we wanted to know, when did you become interested in writing? Has it always been something you've done, or was it a newer hobby? How did that all come about?
Well, I've actually written three books in the War of the Seasons.
Well, yes, you have two out. The third one is not out yet.
I'm about halfway through editing it. I have some really exciting news about that I'll let you guys be the newsbreakers.
Ooh, yay.
But we'll get to that. So I'll answer your question first.
Okay.
So how did I get into writing? I have not always been a writer. I've always told like silly stories because I like to entertain people. I don't know why. I guess that's part of my personality. So I've always told silly stories. I've always been a pretty creative person, but as my husband Ron always says, he says I have creative ADD. He'll say I'll get really into something and then master it and then go, okay, now I'm ready to do something else. So, you know, and then I look at, you know, the past 13 years and I go, oh my gosh, he's right. For a while, I was really into quilting, made lots of really beautiful quilts, and then that got boring. So I started sewing some clothes, and I made lots of ill-fitting, bad clothes, and just decided to give that up. And then, you know, I got really into scrapbooking, did that for a while, and then, you know, everything went digital and I kind of went, oh, what's the point in all this? So I have lots of beautiful scrapbooks from like a 3-year period. And now I do everything. I do a digital photo album every year now. And then, you know, I really got into making costumes and that was huge. And then I learned how to knit so that I could knit Quidditch sweaters. And then about my right around my second deployment to Iraq, it was kind of a two-phase thing. One of the things that, oh, and in between my first and second deployments, I decided I was going to learn how to play guitar. So I did. And it's like all I did was play guitar. And so I get kind of manic when I pick up a new hobby. Like it's all I do. It's all I care about. In fact, if you see my avatar right now on Skype, it's me holding a guitar. It's because I was going through my guitar phase at the time that I started my Skype account. And I've just never bothered to change the picture. So I still play guitar, by the way. I can go for months now without touching one, which is probably kind of sad. Anyways, about my second deployment, I started doing something to just kind of help pass the time. I started a live journal blog of a fictional character named Karen Starkiller in the Star Wars universe, who was an X-Wing, or not an X-Wing pilot. She was a transport pilot. And, you know, I'm a C-130 pilot for the Marine Corps. So it wasn't a really far-fetched. And it was really fun to just do this Bridget Jones-ish / Pride and Prejudice-ish / story that I wrote and would put out like journal entries. And she had followers and I interacted with them in her character. And so it was a little bit of role play, which I'd never done, and a little bit of original storytelling, but within the Star Wars universe, which was a lot of fun. It was my first foray into writing fanfic, I guess, although I didn't really think of it as that. I don't really know what I thought of it as. And then at the same time, an editor contacted me because he was putting together an anthology. They just released this anthology called Supersonic Saints, which was a bunch of stories by LDS, otherwise known as Mormon, pilots. And it was really popular, so they were putting together volume 2, and they wanted a female military pilot. And I don't think I'm the only one that exists, but apparently I'm the only one they knew of. So they contacted me and asked me to submit a story or two for consideration. So I wrote up two flying stories, one combat one, one flight school one, got them both approved by my command, sent them off and didn't think anything of it. And then, you know, lo and behold, not only did they buy one story, but they bought both stories, which I couldn't believe. It was amazing. And I just went, wow, this writing thing's kind of easy. I spent like an hour writing these stories and I made like $500. I should totally write. That's how it works, right? People come to you, ask you to write stuff, and you spit a story out, and then they publish it. Yeah, it doesn't work that way.
No, it does not.
Enter the publishing world with, you know, two sold stories under my belt without having actually had for it, with never, you know, so I had a lot of really bad preconceived notions about publishing, about how you do. I learned really quick, you know, but so that was how I kind of got the writing bug, but nothing really serious until after my second deployment. A few months after I got home, our foster son, who I mentioned with IQM, our foster son Will died in a car accident, and it was pretty devastating for anybody who's ever lost a child. It was one of the most horrible, awful things that you can have happen, and I really didn't know how to deal with it and how to cope. So I just started writing this story about a girl who loses her whole family, and she goes into a fantasy world and deals with it. And it was a very angry, dark, ugly story that I didn't think anybody would ever want to read. And then I let a couple friends read it, and being one, and he was like, you know, I absolutely hate your character and this is horrible, but you know, if you do this, this, and this, and Aaron Alston was another one, and they both were very positive. Like, if you make these changes, it's actually going to not suck. So It took a couple years and a lot of really heavy reworking, and I went, wow, this could actually be something. And it, instead of it being, you know, that first initial draft was me getting out all of my emotions. What the novel is now is almost completely unrecognizable from that first draft. And that would be War of the Seasons, The Human, the first book in my War of the Seasons trilogy. And it really just became its own story and its own. It has its foundation in what happened to Will, but that's just kind of where the idea came from. It, like I said, it's night and day. It's very different.
Yeah, and for those people who haven't read any of the books yet, what can you tell us about the series? Basically what it's about, and you know, they should read it because it's really good.
Seconded. That's a fantastic series. You all should go pick it
and
up.
And I actually don't really like fantasy that much, but I liked it.
I will change your mind. okay, yeah, no problem. So War of the Seasons is a story about a girl named Story. And a lot of people ask me, how'd you come up with the name Story? So I'll tell you that really quick. My husband and I have always wanted to have kids, and we do have children. One is adopted, and then we always have a foreign exchange student living with us. So, but we've never been able to have kids biologically. But, we didn't know that till the last couple of years. So for years, we always thought we were going to, in addition to adopting, have kids biologically, and we already had all the names picked out for all our kids. And for our first daughter, her name was going to be Story, because we love that name. It's whimsical, and it's what we wanted. So you might think we're horrible parents for wanting to saddle our kid with that name, but that's the name we picked. And so when I needed to name my main character in this trilogy, my heroine, Story, I at this point very much thought of her as my daughter. That's how much I cared about her and loved her. And so to me, what better way than to use this name I'd already picked out for my own daughter that I was more than likely never going to get to use. So that's where the name Story comes from. And then it's all about a girl named Story who, like I said, loses her whole family in a car accident and quite literally falls into another world. And this is a fantasy world that's got elves and trolls and dwarves and gnomes and really, really nasty fairies that try to kill her a lot. And she basically falls into what is the middle of a pretty, it's leading toward a pretty epic climactic battle between the seasons. That's why it's called War of the Seasons. And I don't want to give the story away, but she's a part of it and has to make some choices as to whether she's going to work to save people or let people die. So it is your standard trope of the hero's journey, and there is romance and there is action and adventure and definitely magic. And she makes some pretty poor choices. She makes some good choices, and she definitely has to live by the consequences of both her good and bad choices. So there you go. I don't know. Does that adequately explain it, do you think?
I think so, yes.
And I do have to add, I absolutely love Story as a character. I just absolutely fell in love with her the instant she got out of her Jeep at the beginning to go spelunking.
Oh, she was sassy, that's for sure.
So are there any hints at all you can give us about book three?
Yeah, I mean, why don't you ask me questions and I will do, what would you like to know?
Okay. Oh, man.
On the spot. Did you really read the first two?
We did read the first two.
No, I did. And I was very mad when I came to the second one and the third one wasn't out yet.
You read the associated short stories, I'm curious, because those actually fill in a lot of unanswered questions that people have.
I haven't yet, but you've reminded me that I need to, so I will.
So my big question is, are you planning on making me cry while I read the third book?
Okay, so my betas who've all read the third book, I think to a person have all reached there is a certain point where a certain character dies where they have set their computers down and walked away.
Oh no!
That's the mercy kill reaction I had.
Oh, I'm going to need a palette of tissues for this one, aren't I?
I actually do kill off. There are three major characters who die.
Oh wow!
There are there are several characters who die. Like, by major characters, I mean, you know, they've been in other books. We know who they are. Okay. They're very important to story. I'm not going to give hints to who they are. Some people predict them, some people don't. There are several minor characters who die who, you know, people are upset with me over killing them, too. So I can't win. But, you know, it's War of the Seasons. In the third book, we have the big final climactic battle. And I'm sorry, I'm not going to pull a Breaking Dawn and not have a fight. And I'm not have people die. I mean, this is war. People die. Mm-hmm. And it sucks. And it's terrible. And it's awful. But that is life.
It might be fantasy, but there should always be an element of realism and consequence to it, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, there are times when, through the course of writing the three books and the short stories, I mean, I have contacted friends of mine who are geneticists, and I go, can this really happen? You know, I have this person being a hybrid of these two races. Does this make sense? Do my genetics make sense? Because even though it's a fantasy world where I can just wave a little wand and go, magic, I do want it to be based in reality, and I have other friends who are astronomers, and I think, you know, what about this whole bit about stars aligning? Is my science, does my physics make sense here? You know, like, what's, am I doing this right? So I have a lot of friends who are incredibly intelligent, thankfully, and, you know, keep me on the, what I hope is the right path.
So this is a spoiler for people who haven't read the books, but the second book.
Skip ahead about five minutes if you haven't read these books yet.
So the second book ends with Story's friend Josh showing up. So he's in the third. Does he play a big role in the third book?
He does.
Yay! I was excited to see him come back. I kind of felt really bad for him because I was like, he seemed like one of those guys who he's just always there for Story, and she's, you know, doesn't really seem to appreciate him much at the beginning, but hopefully that'll change.
Let's really read the short story The World Spins Madly On.
Okay.
It's this recent one I put out. It's Josh's story. It explains why he shows up at the end of book two, why he's so devoted to Story, in a non-romantic way. And I think that perhaps you will cut her a little bit of slack and realize that their friendship definitely is equal, definitely goes both ways, and she has definitely been there for him.
Okay, I think I'm going to need to read that tonight.
Yeah, me too.
I do some hints at it in the novel. I give a little bit of their background, but only enough. So here's the problem with the novels. The novels are Story's story. They're told from her point of view. We only know what's going on as far as she knows. Now, granted, she's a dreamwalker. She can see a lot of things that other people can't. So it's this great storytelling tool where I can see what's going on in all different places. But we're still limited to her scope and her perception and her understanding of things. And so when things get turned on their head for her, such as, you know, Morgan, her perception of what he was in book one is very different than what her understanding and perception of what he was in book two. You know, her... And just look at her perception of Aranin in book one. He's a big jerk in the beginning, and then by the end, he's this loving, perfect guy, right? Except for he's not. He doesn't really change. Her understanding and perception of him does. So what was I? I was totally meandering. Okay, so my point is, there is a lot of story I can't tell. Like, I can't tell the story about Story's parents in the novels. But in the short stories, I can. So in the short story Girl, you find out all about her parents, how they got together, why they ended up splitting apart. World Spins Madly On, you find out why Story, and it's a story from Josh's perspective, and you find out why the two of them are such good friends. Why would he drop everything and go to an entirely other world after he thought she had just, you know, he thought she was dead, you know? To check on her and to visually see that she was okay. What could possibly motivate a person to do that? I can hint at it in the novel, but that's not the main focus of the novel. And in order to keep the novel pacing going, I have to gloss over a lot of that stuff and drop some hints. If you want the full story, you're going to have to read the short story.
Yeah. One other question I had is, in the books themselves, you've got these maps, you've got this language. How much time did you spend building up all of this foundation for the world you play story in?
Quite a bit, actually. I would say, once I decided that I was gonna, no kidding, make this be a legit novel and not just something where I was crying out over my emotions, I sat down and said, well, all right, if I'm going to write about fairies, which is something I know absolutely nothing about, I need to do some serious research into Celtic mythology and fairy tales. And so I bought a lot of books. I did a lot of research. And then when I decided to world build, I realized I had to know where these places were. And so I drew a map. And then I realized every single one of these races, elves, trolls, dryads, gnomes, they all needed to have, the world itself had to have a history. The reason they were in the situation they were in had to have a massive history and backstory. So I sat down and wrote probably a 20-page treatment of basically the history of this entire world from its creation to the current point that it was at. So it was really just obviously the highlights. So that I could understand. And then the fun thing about research is as you do research, you find out really cool things. Like I learned about Selkies and how they were supposed to be seals that once they shed their seal skins, and coming on land, they would become women. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I want to use Selkies, but I like dogs. I want them to become dogs when they get on land. And then how neat would it be to have our world have gotten all these fairy tales so wrong. So I can take all of this existing, Celtic mythology and other fairy tales from other cultures and mythology and just take them, the parts and the bits that I want, and then add a twist or sometimes not add a twist and change it to fit what the story needs and what's true to the story and this world that I've created. And there are a lot of people who blast me online. The people who really don't like my stories tend to not like it for three reasons. The first being they think Story acts far too mature for her age. The second being they think she acts far too juvenile and stupid for her age.
Okay.
And I've seen like those reviews, like one person will post it and then the next person will post right below it. And I'm like, you two should hang out. And then the third reason is there are some people who are purists when it comes to, this Celtic mythology and to fairy tales. And here I've basically come in and just, la, 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 I'm going to do what I want and write what I want and take what I want. And they get very upset. So I guess it's like the people who are very, I hate The Hobbit because Peter Jackson has added the character of Tauriel. She was never in The Hobbit. How dare you? I'm sorry, guys. I think it's awesome that Peter Jackson is adding her. it's not the book. It's going to be different. It's just another form of storytelling and expression.
Yeah, I can't speak to the third point that people get on your case over, but at least as far as the first two go, that's entirely reconcilable in my head, because Story is a young character, so she can be immature at times, but she went through something pretty traumatic, and something like that seems like it could force someone to grow up in a hurry.
Yes, and that was kind of like when people get pissed at her for behaving like a teenager, I'm like, well, she is a teenager. Yeah. And then when, like, how can she be so mature? I'm like, well, she's been forced to grow up. She's not going to be, she is a real living human being. She's going to sometimes make calculated, logical decisions. And other times she's going to make emotional ones that are really stupid.
Yeah, I thought she rang very true as far as being a teenage girl. She was irrational at times, but people are, so
especially teenagers.
Yeah, pretty much.
But when you factor in the context of her life that you'd given her, it made perfect sense why she would have many of these moments where she did seem really mature.
Yeah. Which is, and I very much, when I wrote her, I was a 17-year-old girl, And so when I was writing her, I would go, okay, how would I have behaved at 17 facing this situation? But then I would also have to put the filter on, okay, but she's not just happy-go-lucky. She's going through some serious PTSD right now. So she's going to be a little bit of a crazy person in her head. And her emotional reactions are not always going to be great, you know? So it was interesting. And, you know, that's why you have pre-readers as well. So Brian very often called me out. He said, she's a bitch and I hate her. And but that is how somebody responds when someone they love dies, you know, and he goes, Kara, I don't want to read the story anymore. You need to tone it down. So a lot of people complain that she's a mean, angry person. And I just go, man, you should have seen the first version.
I kind of want to read the first version now.
Just the day. You can talk to Aaron or Brian about it. They saw it.
Another thing I really like that you included in your book is a playlist of music you were using while you were writing this. How important is music as part of your writing process?
Oh, incredibly so. In the second book, I didn't include a playlist because I didn't feel it was necessary, since every single chapter title was a song title. The third book that is not the case, so it will have a playlist. But for me, music really, really can set a mood. In the third book, I was writing a dryad party, because they're dryads. So of course, before they go off to war, they're going to throw a massive beach party with lots of beer and naked dryads dancing around. And in my mind, dryads have always been this beautiful, you know, they remind me of tropical fish, and their dancing and their movement has always been very evocative of the Brazilian samba to me. And so I was blasting samba music the whole time I wrote that chapter, because that helped me capture the feel of how the party should be going. On another chapter, when I'm writing a fight between Story and Aaron, and gasp, they fight. You know, I played Florence and the Machines, like hit with a kiss with a fist, like over and over again. People who love each other, but like want to beat the crap out of each other right then, because they're so angry. So music really, really, really does help set the tone. I love to listen to Lord of the Rings when I was writing this. Celtic Women is another great one to listen to. Particularly when I'm trying to write the different races, if I have like our world version of their race where I feel like they kind of identify with, I'll often play that kind of music in the background to just help me, if anything, get the vibe right when I'm writing about their character and their culture, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So in addition to War of the Seasons, you've also published a number of short stories. I think the first piece of yours I'd ever read, even before War of the Seasons, was the short story you published in Time Traveled Tales.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I picked up the special copy at Origins last year and read that, and loved it to pieces.
Well, that was Slug. That was my first piece of science fiction. And I think you heard me talk about it at the reading at Dragon Con, which thank you for coming.
You're welcome. It was a lot of fun hearing you read that piece.
Very animated.
I was sad I couldn't go, but I had already promised a friend who I never get to see that I would go with her to her panel. That conflicted, so.
Friendship above, you know, a reading. Especially you can read the story at any time. Get it. So Slug was one of those. So after I wrote War of the Seasons, Mike Stackpole was like, hey, do you want to come be a guest at Origins? And I just kind of went, are you serious? Like, I'm not even published yet. And you want me to? And he said, we'll premiere your book at Origins. It'll be great. And then I went, wow, okay, yeah. And he did that for me and Brian both. And so we did. We went to Origins and we had our tables with our, like, I had my one little book on the table, War of the Seasons, The Human. And it was, I think I sold maybe 10 copies that entire weekend. And you know, I didn't care because I was at a table next to Mike Stackpole and Tim Zahn and Aaron Alston, and, you know, Gene Raby and all these other like amazing real authors as opposed to fake author like me, right? Which is kind of how I felt. But so one of the terms of the contract of going to Origins was we had to submit a short story for an anthology. And I went, well, I don't write short stories. I write novels. I'm a novelist. And I don't write science fiction. I write fantasy. That is what I write. And I didn't know it was supposed to be a time travel story. I must have missed the memo on that. And so I started freaking out, going, oh, my gosh, I have to write a science fiction short story. I don't know how to write a short story. I don't know how to write science fiction. And a friend of mine at the Pentagon was telling me this horror story about how he was slugging at home. And the guy taking them home was suicidal and trying to kill him and the other passenger. And he's telling me this story and my jaw just dropped and I suddenly my brain. And this is how, when you know you're a writer, when you take these horrible stories that people tell you, sometimes funny stories, sometimes just, like I said, horrible. And you go, I could use that instead of like doing the appropriate. Oh, that's so bad. Instead, I went, I could do that. You know, all I have to do is throw an alien in there somewhere, and that makes it science fiction, right? So, and Lane, as I'm sure you know, or Brian, as I'm sure you know, that's pretty much what I did. It's a story about getting hijacked in a slug line and at the Pentagon by an alien.
Yeah, and Time Travel Tales is now is it available for non-Kickstart people to purchase?
Go to the Silence in the Library publishing website. If you go to Silence in the Library, I'm pretty sure you'll go to a Doctor Who website. So if you go to Silence in the Library publishing, you can go ahead and order your copy of Time Travel Tales.
And go pick it up, because in addition to Janine's great short, there's a bunch of great shorts from the likes of Mike Stackpole, Tim Zahn, Aaron Alston, Brian Young,
and Gene Raby, and all the other, you know, Aaron Rosenberg's in it. Maggie Allen's got a great story in it. I mean, there are just so many amazing, fantastic authors in this anthology, and it's just, and it's been this version has been illustrated by Matt Slay, which you might know from, he's done some Iron Man 3 work. He drew Ninja Turtles. Trying to think what else he's done. Oh, whatever. He's done Time Travel Tales, and his artwork is stunning.
So do you have any shorts published in other anthologies that readers may be able to pick up?
I do. I've actually got a superhero story in A Hero by Any Other Name, which Mike Stackpole, Aaron Allison, Brian Young, Ron Garner, Maggie Allen, Maxwell Drake, and oh gosh, why is my brain freezing? Gene Raby also has a story, and R.T. Kalin have a story, and it's a collection of like B-list superheroes or sidekicks, and it's called A Hero by Any Other Name, and it's a lot of fun. And you're not going to find your typical white guy in tights in this anthology. Fine. You know, people of color, young people, old people, sometimes the good guys win, sometimes they don't. People die, people live. Some are feel-good stories, some are just straight-up depressing. So check that out. And that was A Hero by Any Other Name. You can get that on Amazon, also the Silence in the Library publishing website. I've got two anthologies coming out very quickly. In about a week, I've got one called The Dog War that I was asked to contribute to. It's a science fiction, it's a military science fiction anthology, and it's themed with working animals. So look out for that one. It's called The Dogs of War, and aww. I've got a story about a space marine and his working dog, and them fighting six-legged aliens. Then I've got another one. It's actually a sister story to that one, a companion piece called Coming Home, and it comes out in the anthology. Why is my brain freezing on it? I just received it's called War Stories, and I just received the cover art, and I'll be tweeting out a picture, and it's edited by James Gates and Andrew Liptek, and the Kickstarter for that one will be starting in the next, I think, week or so. And that one is all about a pilot who's in fighting in this same science fiction, military science fiction universe on at New Texas, and she's a ambulance pilot, and it's basically her coming home and dealing with PTSD, because one of the things they asked us to do is they wanted us to write about combat, but they also wanted us to write about the effect of combat on the soldier, sailor, or Marine when they get home, on them and on their families. So I thought, okay, I can do that. So you've got combat and you've got the post-combat stuff to deal with as well. And there are dogs in that one too.
And so after War of the Seasons, book three comes out, do you have any other novels you're going to be working on? Any other ideas? Or
actually, you know, that nugget of that bit of that Star Wars fanfic that I did, I actually pulled down offline years ago, and I really just want to sit down and write a military science fiction Pride and Prejudice retelling.
I would buy it.
I really want to do that. So that's kind of probably next. I want to write my memoirs about flight school. I also, there's a fantasy 5-book series I want to write with my husband that he kind of started a couple years ago and then just walked away from. And it's such an amazing concept that I feel like unless I sit down and write it with him, it's never going to get written. And I want to read the stories. So, and then I also have a sequel trilogy potentially way in the future in mind to War of the Seasons. That story is complete at the end of The Hunter, but in the epilogue, I definitely leave a little bit of a window open, a window cracked.
Ooh. For some.
Very cool.
Color me interested on that. Any other projects you'd like to pimp out?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you guys want that breaking news.
Yes.
Always.
I hinted at. So my Kickstarter for War of the Seasons, The Hunter, the third book in my war, the third and last book in the War of the Seasons trilogy, kicks off on October the 8th. And this is, it's, the Kickstarter is to pay for the initial print run of it. But it's the stretch goals that you really, really want to pay attention to, because what my husband, I was recently on a trip, and when I came back from the trip, my husband had arranged with a bunch of authors to be stretch goal authors for the War of the Seasons series. And yeah. So we have a few authors who have agreed to pen short stories about other characters and events in the War of the Seasons universe that you may have heard of. So Clea Linda Jones is one of them. I don't know if any of you follow her. She's a pretty well-known blogger. Yep. She's hilarious and awesome. We've also got Mike Stackpole, who wants to write a story. Cool. Brian Young wants to. Maggie Allen wants to. And Alban Johnson will be doing his launch into the writing world. He's the founder of the 501st. He was also Katie Johnson's dad, who the Katie in my book trilogy was named for. And maybe you're familiar with R2KT and mm-hmm. a lot of the charity work that the 501st does for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And then there's another author who I think is going to do it, but has not completely agreed. So I'm not going to say their name yet because I don't want them to feel bullied into it. So if we hit those stretch goals, the authors that I mentioned, they will write a story in the universe, and it'll be pretty exciting, I think. And then I've got another project where the Kickstarter is going to go in December, and it's called Athena's Daughters, and it's all short stories written by women. It's edited by Jean Raby. It's the artists, the graphic designer, everybody associated with this project is a woman. Because all the main characters in the stories are women, strong women. Whether they're the villain, whether they're an anti-hero, it's about women, strong women. And it's not that we don't love guys. Guys are awesome. But we really, really want to showcase some very, very talented women authors, artists, and stories. So it's, like I said, it's called Athena's Daughters, and we've got some really great authors. Gail Z. Martin's going to be in that. How did I get Mary's name wrong? Male Robinette Cowell. Oh,
gosh. Yeah.
Like I said, Jean Raby's going to edit it. She's also got a story in it. Sherwood Smith has a story in it. I've got a story in it. Maggie Allen does as well. And some other pretty well-known names that I think Trisha Barr is one of our stretch goal authors for that one. And yeah, it's going to be a pretty exciting project. I can't wait. The artist who's doing the interior artwork is Betsy Waddell, who does all the cover art for my War of the Seasons. And I know we're reaching an hour, so I probably need to wrap up. But that's what I've got coming up. So, any other
questions? Well, just as soon as those go live, just be sure to send us links so we can get those out there as well. I'm quite excited about both of those Kickstarters.
I definitely will. Thank you guys so much.
So before we let you go, where can we find you online? Where can readers reach you and get access to the stuff you've written?
So to talk to me online, I'm pretty much all over social media. Anything, so Janine Spendlove or Janine K. Spendlove, depending on how many characters they allow me to use. If you go to my website, JanineSpendlove.com, or you could type in WarOfTheSeasons.com or Aelenora.com, it all goes to the same place. At the bottom of my website is a link to all my social media, but I'm on Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr. I reblog a lot on Tumblr, so don't follow me there if you don't like to see lots of reblogs, especially if you don't want to see lots of reblogs about Star Wars and the Beatles. I'm really on Instagram a lot. I'm hit or miss with Twitter. I'm never on Facebook. Everything on Facebook is from my Twitter. But if that's the only way you get stuff, if you tag me on Facebook, I'll see it and I'll go. So, but those are kind of the highlights. You can find my books really anywhere. Primarily, I guess, Amazon, or if you've got an e-reader, you can get it there. You can also get them at my website. You can get them at silenceinthelibrarypublishing.com. Unless it's somebody else publishing it, then you'll need to go to their website. If you go to a bookstore and they don't have my books, tell them to order my books, and then you can buy my books there. And then obviously you can get my books from me at any of the conventions I go to. I go to a lot. Nothing on the West Coast yet. I'm sorry, guys. Get somebody to invite me, and I'll do my darndest to come out. And my schedule of what conventions I'm doing are posted on my website. So I guess, is that everything? Yeah.
I think so. Thank you so much for coming on today, Janine.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for letting me talk your ear off.
It was a lot of fun.
No problem at all. Thank you so much.
Hope I answered all your questions.
Yes, you did.
Bye.
Bye.
Let's be with you.
We want to thank Janine Spendlove again for coming on the podcast. We had a really great time talking to her, and definitely go and check out her books, War of the Seasons, and we'll link to the Kickstarter for book three when
Once
it starts.
Once that goes live, as well as her all-female writer and artist power hour anthology. That sounds really neat.
Yes, it does.
So that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you for listening to another episode of Tashi Station Radio. We want to remind you that this episode of Tashi Station Radio has been brought to you in part by Her Universe and Audible.com. Check the links on the site and help us keep the lights on here. On Twitter, you can find us with the handles at Tashi_Station. That's the official show account. You can find Nancy with at Nancy Pants. That's Nancy with an I. You can find me with at Lane Winry, LaneWinree on Facebook. We're the Tashi Station Network. We're available on the iTunes Store. If you like what you hear, help do leave a review. It does help us grow the show. You can find our columns and news at Tashi Station.net. Thank you for listening to another episode. We will catch you next week, and hopefully next week Nancy won't make faces at me while I record that outro.
Bye!
This podcast has been brought to you by Majestic Giraffe Productions and is the official podcast of TashiStation.net. All Star Wars names, music, and logos are property of their respective trademark and copyright holders. Tashi Station Radio is not endorsed by Lucasfilm or any division of the company. Now go pick up some power converters.